Greetings, this is podcast number 22 of Blast the Right. I'm Jack Clark from therationalradical.com, www.therationalradical.com. Today we have two segments. In the first segment, we'll discuss how the U.S. is fighting against democracy in Haiti, Venezuela, and Bolivia. In the second segment, we'll listen to an excerpt from a great new podcast that one of our listeners started. As usual, music credits will be at the end. Let's get right into it. One of the things that gets me most angry is when I hear right-wingers claim that our foreign policy is to promote democracy in third world and developing nations. As with most things right-wingers say, the truth is the exact opposite. Now, I often find that letter writers to newspapers have a succinct, effective way of framing issues. So this segment will start off with my reading excerpts from such a letter, and I'll also end this segment with excerpts from another letter. Here's the first one. Quote, I agree that we need to compete successfully with President Hugo Chavez of Venezuela. What is his secret weapon? Helping the poor. How can we compete with him? Help the poor. A strong market economy is important to long-term success, but the economy alone does not guarantee democracy and human rights. Trade agreements should not amount to a trade subsidy taken out of the hide of workers. People need access to health care, education, and decent jobs, and they should not have to fear being thrown out on the street. You cannot simply tell a person in dire need, wait for the market to take care of you. That is a most callous thing to say. Close quote. Unfortunately, extracting a third world nation's wealth out of the hide of its workers and telling people in dire need, wait for the market to take care of you, which it of course never does in those nations, is exactly what U.S. foreign policy is all about. We accomplish this with a two-pronged approach. A. Political manipulation of the electoral process to thwart the will of the majority of the citizens of these nations. And that's to allow B. Economic exploitation of the country to the detriment, the continued impoverishment of the majority of the citizens of these nations. In a prior podcast, I read a quite incomplete list of countries where we had overthrown democratically elected governments and or propped up dictatorships. That list read Iran, Guatemala, Chile, Indonesia, Zaire, formerly known as the Congo, Nicaragua, the Philippines. In this podcast, let's see what we're currently doing around the world. Much of this will be based on a recent article by Yifat Suskind, published on commondreams.org. She's communications director for MADRE, a wonderful organization that combines charity with progressive advocacy. MADRE.org, MADRE.org. I contribute to them and would urge you to also. When right-wingers look south, south of our border, they can't help but notice that nearly 300 million of South America's 365 million people have elected left-wing governments. The Bush administration is working overtime to reverse those results when it can and to prevent more such left-wing governments from being elected. We'll focus on three nations, Haiti, Venezuela, and Bolivia. Haiti. By way of background, did you know that in 1915, the U.S. invaded Haiti and occupied the country for the next 19 years? Then U.S. President Woodrow Wilson had said he wanted to make the world safe for democracy, but our actions in Haiti were the exact opposite. We installed a puppet government, changed the constitution to allow foreigners to own land, took over the economy, and, according to an article in the Miami Herald, instituted a system of compulsory labor for poor Haitians. And anyone who resisted the occupation? They were crushed with military force. Later in Haiti's history, we supported for many, many years the brutal Duvalier dictatorship. Finally, in 1991, Haitians, in an internationally recognized democratic election, chose a priest, a very popular priest, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, as president. But he didn't want to follow our orders on how to rule. He actually wanted to spend money to help the starving, disease-ridden poor majority who had elected him. So merely 9 months into his term, the first Bush administration overthrew him. Then Bill Clinton, through the threat of military intervention, put Aristide back in power a few years later. But Aristide, again, didn't want to follow our dictates. The U.S. started to destabilize and cripple Aristide's rule. Finally, in 2004, George W. Bush delivered the coup de grace, overthrowing Aristide and hustling him off to exile in a Pentagon aircraft. Now, the U.S. government will deny being involved in either the 1991 or 2004 coups, but given our 100-year history in Latin America, if you believe that, I have a large metal structure in an aquatic setting in New York that I'd like to sell you. Please email me at rational@adelphia.net for the particulars. So with this sordid background, what's going on now in Haiti? Have we changed our ways? Are we supporting democracy there now? Of course not. The puppet government we installed has just postponed elections again. Why? Because Aristide's party has won by a landslide every election since 1991 that international observers concluded was fair. The majority of Haitians are poor, and Aristide rules in their interest, so they vote for him, they vote for that party. If a fair election were held now, Aristide's party would win in a landslide. So our puppet government has postponed the election to give it more time to fix the election and make sure our hand-picked candidates win. Here are some of the steps they're taking to accomplish that. They're making it hard for Aristide supporters to register and vote. Under the Aristide government, there were 10,000 registration and polling sites in the country of 8 million people. Our puppet government has set up only a few hundred. Shades of 2004 Ohio. The Bush administration must have sent some Republican election operatives down there. Or is there a Haitian Karl Rove who learns well from his masters? There are apparently some large poor neighborhoods that don't have any registration sites at all. Those neighborhoods are Aristide areas. I wonder why they don't have any registration sites there. Our puppet government is also making it hard for the pro-Aristide forces to campaign. Opposition figures have been jailed on false charges or no charges at all. Political demonstrations have been banned. And the Haitian National Police have attacked again and again anti-government protesters. Is the Bush administration condemning and effectively stopping our puppet government from this repression? No! They just sent nearly $2 million worth of guns and other police equipment to Haiti just in time for the election. Ah, sweet democracy, right-winger style. Let's go on to Venezuela. We spent an entire podcast on Venezuela a few weeks ago, podcast number 18. You might want to check that out. The relevant history of Venezuela is that two elite political parties took turns ruling the country for decades. Both parties ruled in the interests of the rich, and the majority of the population who were poor, well, they just had to suffer. Then in 1998, the impossible happened. The majority poor voted and elected Hugo Chavez the president. He won in a landslide. International observers certified that the election was fair. And what did Hugo Chavez start to do? He started using the riches from the nation's oil industry to help the majority poor. The hungry poor are being fed. The sick poor are being treated. The uneducated poor have an opportunity to go to school. All this is a cardinal sin to right-wingers, helping the poor. Even worse, in the eyes of a right-winger, what if the poor in other countries looked to Venezuela and said to themselves, maybe we can elect a president in our country since we're the majority here also, and maybe we can elect a president who'll govern in our interests, just like Hugo Chavez is, governing in the interests of the majority of Venezuelans. So what does the right-wing mind conclude? The hell with democracy. We've got to get rid of this dangerous man. The U.S. National Endowment for Democracy spent millions of dollars every year funding opposition groups. These groups, in 2002, resorted to a military coup to oust Hugo Chavez. But millions of Venezuelans, including, as I understand it, lower ranks of the army, rallied to Chavez, and the coup was overturned in less than 2 days. Right-wingers then organized and held a recall referendum against Chavez. He defeated that as well. The recall referendum was, of course, organized and financed by the United States. They may deny it, but you know that's what happened. We know the history of Latin America. On December 4th, just a few weeks ago, there was a congressional election in Venezuela. The polls showed that Chavez's party would win in a landslide. So what did the U.S. engineer? We engineered the main opposition parties boycotting the election. They claimed that the vote wouldn't be fair. The vote took place, and international observers said it was fair. That U.S. tactic failed. What you must remember is that, as Susskind puts it, quote, all 8 elections held in Venezuela under Chavez have been declared free and fair by independent observers, including Jimmy Carter, close quote. But Chavez is a dictator who must be killed, as Pat Robertson famously said.
And he's going to make that a launching pad for communist infiltration and Muslim extremism all over the continent. You know, I don't know about this doctrine of assassination, but if he thinks we're trying to assassinate him, I think we really ought to go ahead and do it. It's a whole lot cheaper than starting a war.
Right-wingers don't care about democracy. They're quite happy with a dictator if he does our bidding, like Mubarak in Egypt, Musharraf in Pakistan, and the leaders of the other stands nations adjacent to or nearby Afghanistan. If a real democracy produces results they don't like, then it's not a democracy to right-wingers. It's a crisis of democracy. The democratically elected president is magically transformed into a tyrant whom the knight on a white horse U.S. must depose. How sickening is our hypocrisy? how deadly are our actions for so many unfortunate citizens of these developing and third world nations. Let's wrap up with Bolivia. Bolivia has huge natural gas reserves, yet the majority of its population lived in abject poverty. The wealth from the gas benefited only a few. As even conservative columnist David Brooks admits, quote, in Bolivia, 3% of the people, who tend to be white, control almost all of the economic resources, and 65% of the people, who tend to be Indian, control almost nothing, close quote. What was the solution to this injustice? As Naomi Klein put it in an article in The Nation, quote, a decade ago, Bolivia was forced by the IMF to privatize its oil and gas industries on the promise that it would increase growth and spread prosperity. When that didn't work, the lenders demanded that Bolivia make up its budget shortfall by increasing taxes on the working poor. Bolivians had a better idea. Take back the gas and use it for the benefit of the country. Close quote. So a movement of indigenous Bolivians arose, the majority of the country. This attempt at taking power through democratic means by the Bolivian poor was fought tooth and nail by the Bushians. They publicly threatened to cut off economic aid if Bolivians elected Evo Morales, one of the leaders of the movement. The administration has spent millions of dollars trying to create a competing pro-U.S. indigenous movement. Donald Rumsfeld tried the outside agitator approach, claiming that Hugo Chavez must be pulling the strings in Bolivia. Why all this right-wing agitation against Evo Morales? Because he wants to use the country's wealth, Bolivia's vast natural gas reserves, to improve the lives of the Bolivian poor, who constitute the majority of its citizens. Sound familiar? Aristide and Chavez want to use their country's resources to help their poor majorities, and they also thereby became enemies of the right wing. As Susskind so aptly puts it, quote, Morales's platform is extreme only if you consider policies that guarantee mass poverty and vast inequality to be moderate, close quote. Policies that guarantee mass poverty and vast inequality? Why, that's the right-wing agenda in a nutshell. Happily, despite our interference, Evo Morales was just elected president of Bolivia, swamping the opposition. As a New York Times editorial put it, quote, Evo Morales will be the first member of the indigenous majority to run Bolivia since the conquistadors arrived nearly 5 centuries ago, close quote. Now, how long will it take the Bushians, how long will it take the right wing to attempt a coup against Morales, just like they've done with Aristide and Chavez? We need to keep a close eye on that. The United States has a population over 30 times the population of Bolivia or Haiti. Our economy is 500 times bigger than Bolivia's, 1,000 times bigger than Haiti's. And of course, in military might, we're infinitely more powerful than either. Imagine if there was a country with 30 times our population. It would have 9 billion people. And it had 500 or 1,000 times bigger of an economy. And it had infinitely greater military might than us. And then it started interfering with our elections. Maybe that country would want to prevent us from electing George W. Bush. How would you right-wingers like that? What a despicable bully we are. Picking on the small, defenseless nations and trying to impose policies that inevitably lead to massive suffering and death among their populations. So there you have it. Haiti, Venezuela, Bolivia. Threats to cut off aid, funding of opposition groups, recall elections, violence, coup d'etats. Hey, Haitian people, you want Aristide? You can't have him. Hey, Venezuela people, you want Chavez? You can't have him. Hey, Bolivian people, you want Evo Morales? You can't have him. What is crucial to remember is that in each instance, we're opposing the person who the vast majority of the population clearly prefers. We don't want democracy abroad unless it produces a candidate we like. And it isn't just these three countries, it's all over the world. The hell with who the people of that country want. We're Americans. We have the God-given right to select the rulers for all humanity. That's true democracy. There's a bit of a lesson here applicable to our own situation domestically. And for that, I'm going to turn to the second letter to the editor that I promised earlier. This was a letter to the New York Times, which, despite the fact that the New York Times is constantly condemned by the right for being so far left, the editorial that is being criticized in the letter could have been written by a right winger. The letter reads, quote, "You point out that President Hugo Chavez has used high oil prices, quote, to increase funds for popular social programs for the poor, making him electorally unassailable," close quote. "You note that this, among other factors, has led to a, quote, dangerous concentration of power," close quote. "This suggests that it is a vulgar trick to use profits from Venezuela's resources to win electoral support by social spending, and that electoral support from a large number of poor people concentrates more power at the top than gaining the support of smaller numbers of the well-to-do. Is the real art of democracy, then, to win sufficient electoral support from the well-to-do without spending much of a country's resources on the poor? If so, American democracy is the state of the art," close quote. Yes, sir, and right-wingers are the expert practitioners of this nefarious brand of governance. The New York Times editorial criticized by the letter writer ran before Evo Morales was elected. After the election of Morales in Bolivia, the New York Times ran another editorial. Perhaps they were chastened and wisened up by the election of Morales. They said, quote, "When denunciations of Yankee imperialism in Latin America start coming from the presidential palaces, as well as the streets and opposition benches, Washington needs to change its ways," close quote. Well, before Washington can change its ways, who's in charge in Washington must be changed. Out with the Bushians. Out with the right wing. Because they will never change their ways.
We know the Prince of Peace would never sanctify the bloodshed, nor ever take from the hungry for the well-fed. Judgment Day is coming.
That bumper music about Judgment Day is quite appropriate given what we're now going to talk about. In podcast number 16, I asked the question, would Jesus be a right winger? I answered quite certainly no, he would not be a right winger. I don't know how many of you know this. My podcast homepage is set up like a blog. You can enter comments about each podcast's show. In fact, there may be more right-wingers now posting comments than progressive people, so maybe some of you progressive listeners need to get onto that podcast homepage and enter some comments to lend some balance back to the situation. In any event, a listener signing himself by the name Shreveport Dude wrote in a comment, I love that name, Shreveport Dude, just the way it sounds. What he said in part was, quote, "As for Jesus being right-wing, I am an evangelical Christian. It is with 100% confidence that I say to you that Pat Robertson would call Jesus a devil or a commie if he first appeared now. George Bush would call him a dangerous terrorist." Close quote. I certainly agree with those sentiments, and I was just going to read this. Then, lo and behold, Shreveport Dude did us all one better. He started a podcast. He sent me some excerpts, and I loved it. It's on my favorite subject, right-wing phony fake Christians. Pseudo-Christians, as I call them. What he sent me was too long to play here in its entirety, so with his permission, I spliced together a few bits of it, and I'm going to play it for you. Apparently, the sound quality suffered a bit between his podcast and my splicing it together, but it's still quite listenable, too. The podcaster's real name is Jeff. When you listen, imagine if Jeff were speaking directly to Pat Robertson or to Jerry Falwell on national TV.
Jesus Christ, I believe, was a liberal, and conservatives killed him. I cannot see Jesus going, what are all these taxes coming out of my check, feeding all these poor people? Jesus would not have a problem with taxes coming out of his check to feed poor people. Can you see him complaining about that? Okay, and I'm telling you, you right-wing people, you right-wing Christians have lost the Spirit of God, I'm telling you. Because you are, buddy, hating the poor. And what did Jesus say about that? When I was sick, you didn't care for me. When I was in prison, you didn't visit me. When I was hungry, you didn't feed me. And you guys don't want to feed people. You don't want to do anything for the poor. You say they'll make it on their own. Go ahead and yell over me. You know, go ahead and deny the word of God. Okay? The next time you see a person asking you for money, that's Jesus asking you for money.
I know that Jesus, you know, wasn't talking specifically about American politics when he said this. But there's no way that you can think about the Republican platform. The only word to use is bitching about the poor. You know, just grumbling about taking care of these people. You know, they don't want to feed the poor. They don't want to clothe the poor. They don't want to help the sick. They don't want to feed their own kids in public schools. They don't want to do anything for other people. It's just me and my own. That's it. That is not the Spirit of God. Now, you can plunk down some money in a collection plate. And you know what? I think that is enough. That is enough charity for a Christian. I really believe that. But if you plunk that money down in the collection plate, and at the same time, you're cursing the poor, you know, you're grumbling about the money coming out of your check going to feed poor people, then I think you had better read that scripture. Matthew 25, verses 32 through 46. And then ask yourself, do I want to be a part of these people who are going against the will of God?
Pretty powerful stuff, huh? Imagine if there were progressive religious leaders who did this every day, speak like Jeff did to the Pat Robertsons and Jerry Falwells of the world. I do disagree when he said that putting money in the collection plate is enough. I don't think it discharges a Christian's responsibilities under Matthew 25, which, after all, relates also to how society as a whole treats the least of these. I think Jeff would agree with that. Maybe I'll have him on and we can talk about it. Now, I haven't had a chance to check out most of the rest of his various podcasts. I urge you to do so. And if you do, go check it out. Get back to me and let me know what you think. Jeff's podcast is called Republicans Behaving Badly. Just type in Republicans Behaving Badly in Google, preferably without any spaces between the words, and it'll come right up. Jeff also has a blog called GOP Exposed. Type that into Google and you'll find it as well. If anyone knows of any other podcasts worthy of being featured here on Blast the Right, drop me a line and let me know. Well, that'll about wrap it up for today. If you liked what you heard, please tell a friend about Blast the Right. There's a Send This Page to a Friend link right on the podcast homepage. We have a book recommendation from a listener. Alexandra, a Midwest college student, recommends Bill Press's book, How the Republicans Stole Christmas. Music credits. The opening instrumental was L.A. Nightmare by 22 Caliber. You can find them at music.podshow.com. The bumper music, Judgment Day, was by Wackiavelli. They're at www.wackiavelli.com. WACKIAVELLI.com. We'll close the podcast on an upbeat note with a bit of Taking My Country Back by Honky Tonkers for Truth. Links to that song, as well as to all the other music played on Blast the Right, can be found on my music resources page, which is linked to right off the main podcast homepage. Also, links to the data resources I use in this podcast can be found on my data resources page, which is also linked to from the main podcast homepage. This is the last show of 2005, so let me wish a happy and a healthy new year to everyone. So, until next time, I'll sign off and say I love you all, including all you right-wing pieces of crap.
I'm taking my country back. Son, you ain't been doing her right. Oh, I've been watching you and I don't like how you've been treating my stars and stripes.